to our latest episode of the Ibanez Physicians podcast. And today, our guest is Manuel Manoshakyan. He's currently a second-year medical student at the University of Belamend in Lebanon. And actually, the way I got contacted by Manuel is through LinkedIn. He was listening to our podcast with Dr. Mariana Helwa and then discovered it and was very excited to help us out with it. Today, we will be discussing multiple fads in medicine that are being circulated on social media, and we will analyze whether they're true or false. Manuel, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dr. Diab. Glad to be on the podcast. It's an honor for me, and I'm looking forward to having a fruitful talk.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's like these days, you go on social media, you go on Instagram, you go on Google, and people like start Googling things or looking at things on TikTok or Instagram, discussing treatment of various diseases. And a lot of this, I mean, it's very hard these days to like know if this evidence-based or not evidence-based, and it's very hard to delineate this. And I think you are much younger than us, so you're into this TikTok and Instagram trend much more than us. Can you tell us a bit about this trend and how it's circulating in Lebanon?
Yes, definitely. This phenomenon that we're talking about is not only happening in Lebanon, it's happening worldwide. Basically, everyone on TikTok or on Instagram has become a doctor, between quotation marks. Everyone is giving medical advice. Sometimes, maybe most of the time, such advice does not have any medical basis. And I think, quite frankly, any advice that is given without any scientific basis or without being accredited in what you're talking about could be dangerous to public health. Such destructive trends could be a problem. So I think we need to talk about them. We're going to name a few now, and we are going to observe how absurd things are getting and what absurd ideas are out there on the internet, especially on TikTok. It's getting crazy and out of this world.
Right, exactly. And the scary part is people following it without looking more into it. So one of them is, I think, is people who have a lot of earwax. Like there's one that was circulating, which said putting a lit candle in your ear to remove the earwax. Does that help? And how did this start circulating in the first place?
Yes, that is an idea. And I might link the video for this. I could put it. Apparently, this method is called coning or just ear candling. The idea behind it says you light up a candle and you put the other side in your ear, definitely, or you would burn yourself. And supposedly, it creates a type of vacuum in your ear and sucks the earwax out. That might just be one of the craziest ideas I've heard, because it's definitely not true. We are talking about risks of burn and injury because of that. We are talking about earwax compaction because of this. When you put the candle in your ear, you are pushing the earwax even further, which is going to cause damage to the ear. And putting aside everything related to infection because of inserting a foreign body right into the ear. It's funny. I'm going to put in the link. I'm going to put in the video so people can actually watch and assess for themselves. Anyway, to be the devil's advocate, such a practice has no scientific basis. Au contraire, like they say, no, it's actually very dangerous to do. And I do not recommend anyone to do it or even listen to anyone on TikTok giving this advice.
Yeah, because I'm trying to figure out like how, if you put a burning, like a lit candle into your ear, how that would create a vacuum. I don't see that happening.
It doesn't. I don't know who came up with the idea. And this trend of coming up with conspiracy theories and sensationalism, I don't even know how people could give such fake doctors even a chance on a platform to be able to give such information. It's going to get crazier. I swear, this is just getting started. If we're talking about this, if we're mentioning this.
I can see it. For example, if you've got hair in your ear, you can potentially burn the hair out, get the wax out from the from the ear.
Exactly.
But I think, I mean,
exactly.
The other way is, I mean, these days, even they say don't use cotton balls to take the earwax out of your ear. But you can, if you can't hear very well, if it affects your hearing, then you can potentially go to an ENT specialist and they can clean out your ear that way.
Exactly.
Because I think earwax, I mean, its effect mostly on you is on your hearing. I think just can decrease like your hearing in the ear that's affected by the earwax, and that's how you would want to clean it in that case.
Exactly, but without talking about all the benefits of earwax, it's there for a reason. It's there to protect our ear canal, and there are methods to clean out earwax in a certain way if it's obstructing anything. So there are specialists for that, not TikTok doctors.
And the other one I think that came out crazy is ingesting borax, which is laundry powder containing sodium borate for joint pain relief. I mean, we know there's a lot of people, especially older people who have wear and tear arthritis or osteoarthritis and have a lot of pains in their joints. But also there's younger people who do sports and have like sports injuries. So where did that come from, ingesting borax, and where was that video posted?
Okay, that video was also posted on TikTok. We'll also link that. I don't know who came up with it. I don't know how it started. I don't even know how they are professing the scientific basis behind it. It's crazy. Basically, borax is a type of detergent in the US. It's sodium borate. Its chemical name is sodium borate. And someone on the internet, I don't know who that guru is, came up with the idea. The idea started with that guy, that ingesting sodium borate will cause joint pain relief. We're talking about ingesting laundry detergent. Imagine that, laundry detergent, it causes joint pain relief. Okay, so again, to state, no, that has no scientific basis. It is unsafe, it is toxic, it will cause many symptoms such as poisoning. And it could even cause death. It will accumulate in the body, which will also be chronically toxic to the body. And it's not the mainstay for joint pain treatment. You have joint pain, you go to the doctor, you are given medication. If you have arthritis, if you have knee pain, ankle pain, shoulder pain, no, that's definitely not recommended at all.
So what's sodium borate? Like what is it made of? Like, is it an, I mean, laundry detergent is alkali, right? It's like a base, I think.
Yes. It's basically a base. It's a combination of, its chemical name is sodium and borate, sodium borate together. It's, that's the molecule itself.
Yeah. So basically it can lead to maybe significant manifestations for you if you take it. And I don't know how would that relieve joint pain. I'm not sure where that came from. But the other one is, which I find interesting is, I mean, there's a lot of people who go into gyms and do bodybuilding and stuff like that, like bodybuilders ingesting synthol into the muscles. So how,
yes.
What's that practice?
Okay. To start, synthol is a chemical compound made out of mostly triglycerides and lidocaine. Lidocaine, we all know, it's a local anesthetic. And this trend started a very long time ago. It's actually has been a trend, I think, as far as the 60s, 70s in the US, when bodybuilders would be preparing for a competition, they would realize that, okay, in bodybuilding, aesthetics is such an important term. So bodybuilding is actually a sport in the pursuing of aesthetics, an aesthetic look. And you win in a competition if you have an aesthetic body, if you have aesthetic proportions, big arms, big legs, whatever. Okay. So a trend came out where people would actually inject that synthol in order to fix asymmetries. So if a bodybuilder had the right bicep, which was bigger than the left bicep, they would inject a bit of synthol. So that oil that they are injecting could give the effect that the muscle is bigger. It is a very dangerous practice. It has also not been recommended by doctors. Papers have come out about this. It's not recommended at all. And if we're injecting a foreign body, we know that has potential dangers on the immune system. You are injecting a foreign body into you, and it has a lot of adverse effects. And the funny part is, eventually, the effects will subside. We're going to still have the foreign body in the bicep, let's say, but the effects will subside, and it's not going to look as pleasing as it used to look.
Yeah, and
I think that's it.
The other issue I can see with it is, like, you're injecting lidocaine. So if you inject it into a blood vessel, then it can cause arrhythmias, obviously, because lidocaine is a treatment for arrhythmias, but can affect your EKG or electrical conduction in the heart. So it can cause arrhythmias. And then if you inject triglycerides, I can see that if it goes into your blood, you can cause, like, fat embolism or even death potentially. I mean, I can see that happening. But this is, like, potentially like muscle augmentation, like you do breast augmentation or you do Botox, you inject some sort of your muscles trying to augment them.
Yes, I think this is another level after injecting PEDs into your body. PEDs, performance enhancing drugs, which are used commonly in the bodybuilding world, especially in competitions where testing is not required. I think this is a farther level. PEDs sometimes are recommended by endocrinologists. People know about them. There's a bit of more research about it, but injecting Synthol is majorly toxic. I'm against everything that's going on. I'm inject any type of enhancement. I'm against any type of advantage, because we know about the adverse effects. And if such procedures are not done by doctors or by professionals, then they will definitely be, we could say, up to 99% certainty that they will be unsafe, because there is no medical supervision and no one can play their own doctor. We all have to be safe.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's crazy. Well, and this was TikTok too, right? Was it TikTok or Instagram?
No, this has been a trend before social media even existed, surprisingly.
But are people, like, reliving it on TikTok or no?
Yes, they are mentioning it on TikTok. They are mentioning it on TikTok, especially on the channels that are related to aesthetics and how boys should grow. I don't know. Sometimes I get this content on my algorithm and I'm still surprised.
Yeah, and I mean, the other one that's crazier, because these days, like, everybody's talking about, like, weight loss medications, like, in Lebanon, I think a lot of people use Ozempic, and in the US, it's like Zepbound, Mounjaro, like multiple other ones like Wegovy and all this stuff. And even, like, companies are starting to sell, like, I mean, the FDA came out with a warning saying that you need to take the drug that's offered by the drug company and not take, like, any of the synthetic drugs that are being given to patients at this point, because a lot of these drugs are in back order. Well, but the crazy one is, maybe you should not do any of these drugs. You should do cotton balls, right? A cotton ball diet, dipped in liquids such as juices or smoothies. Like, you dip a cotton ball in smoothie and drink it. And this is supposed to, I mean, how does that work to make you lose weight?
Okay. So, as you said, yes, weight loss is a major trend, is a major title. It's a better word to use. It's a major title right now in Lebanon and in the world. And Ozempic is a star drug, and we're all hearing about it. We know about the effects. We know about the side effects. That's all researched. But I think this just might be the craziest trend I heard of. If anyone has any worse or dangerous trend, please send them to me. I would be more than happy to know about them. The cotton ball diet, as you said, is a diet that involves consuming cotton balls, but not in a plain way. Let's pay attention to that. They dip the cotton ball in any juice, in any sauce, or whatever, and they ingest it. As they profess that the cotton ball, eventually, when we ingest it, it will eventually expand in the stomach and it will induce a feeling of satiety. that's what they're professing, that's their argument. Okay, just let us state something. It's very dangerous to do. It's a crazy thing to do. And we could mention all of the side effects and all of the dangers because of this. First of all, we are talking about nutritional deficiencies. A cotton ball diet is not a recommended diet. Second of all, it's a toxic compound. It should not be in the GI system. We cannot ingest it. And those are two main points because of everything. We're not talking about the choking hazard because of ingesting these balls. We are not talking about, it's crazy. We are not mentioning any of the problem, any of the additional problems related to it.
Yeah, I mean, these are crazy, crazy things going on. Yes. One of the things, I mean, since we mentioned all the stuff, I mean, we talked about social media, and now there's the advent of ChatGPT and artificial intelligence. I mean, people, information now is so available, like there's an overload of information for people to use at this point. How should people deal with all this information? I think also it's an oversimplification to say, you know, go to your doctor and ask them every time, because there's not enough doctors to answer all these questions. But how are people going to be able to filter all this information and know what's right and what's wrong? What's a good way to do that?
Okay, that's a very nice question, actually. Doctors' fears a few years ago, before the advent of ChatGPT and all of these AI tools, was patients looking up their symptoms on Google. And we all know the memes and we all know the funny parts that someone could look up a headache and bam, they think they have a tumor in their head. So we know how dangerous that is. I believe that as doctors and as medical professionals or future medical professionals, we not only have a job towards ourselves or towards the patients that we're treating, but towards the community. We need to be able to filter out this information that might be dangerous or might be toxic to any individual and promote good health practices or good practices at home. Playing the devil's advocate, I believe looking up information online is not a bad thing. I might think that it could help with more information and people actually knowing more about their symptoms or medical cases or trends or whatever going on. But I recommend that with caution. So people who are actually looking up such things or looking up information should tread very slowly and very carefully. If trend or advice does not have a medical basis, does not have a medical paper linked to it, and if that medical paper is not actually published by a reputable institution, I am totally against any advice that might be put out by that source. Always check the source for whatever you're watching, whatever you're reading, the information you're reading about, because I believe, and that's, I believe that almost to 100% certainty that most of the information out there is fake and is not recommended. The good advice that we can find could be limited. I believe that it's super limited. You always have to check the source. You have to check who published it and what the credentials of the person who is publishing or talking about that advice that he or she is giving. Who are they and what are their credentials, and are they actually reputable people that we can trust with giving out such information and not just clicking on the first link that we get and listening to that person's advice and following it?
Right, because in the past you used to, like, people could read medical journals. Let's say they come to your house and there, a lot of them are peer-reviewed, so there's people who have reviewed these articles and looked at the data, made sure it's accurate and stuff like that. And now anybody can post anything on social media and record it. So I think doctors, there are a lot of doctors now are on social media too, and they can counter potentially some of this stuff by having their own social media accounts discussing certain diseases, and actually even they use it for promotion in that case. So exactly. from you guys' standpoint as medical students, I mean, you're much younger than us at this point. And I think the way we learned in the past, we used to go to class. I don't know if you guys still learn the same way, but I remember the AUB days when you just go like med one, med two, you sit in class, you write notes. In our case, we used to have like one guy who wrote all the notes in the lectures. And then he would take them to Ghali Copy Center across the AUB. They would copy them all and sell them to us afterwards. Now, I think, I hope you get your information in a different way at this point. How do you guys get your medical information? How do you confirm its legitimacy?
Okay, times have changed. to start off, the information that we get in class or we are learned is on a platform. It's all online, be it PowerPoints or voiceover PowerPoints or whatever. So that's how we study mainly. And the internet has played a positive role mostly. If we want to look something up, we do not have to go to the library and look up that information that we are looking for in books. It's all on the internet. But as I said, we do focus on the source where we are getting that information from. If it's not from a peer-reviewed journal, if it's not from a reputable institution, an academic institution, we let that information go. We could not trust that information. And I believe that as future healthcare professionals, as I mentioned before, we have a duty towards our community in promoting safe practices and giving out safe advice. We already know about how a doctor is given such importance, or the doctor's advice is given such importance in Lebanon. And as such people, with people who actually look up to us in order to guide them in whatever they do medically speaking, I believe that we should always be well informed about any advice that we are giving or any trend that we are refuting.
So what's your advice to people your age, like young people your age who are either medical students or even not in medical school, when they're bombarded with all this information? Let's say a friend of yours goes to the gym every day, is trying to improve his appearance, get more muscular. It comes to you and says, you know, I'm going to inject myself with whatever Synthol. How do you counter that? And what advice do you give him to build his muscles or her muscles otherwise?
Okay, putting aside all the rage I would be feeling for the first 5 to 10 minutes and the bad reaction of what the hell are you even thinking about? Putting all of that aside, I would take a step back and I would actually tell them about the dangerous effects of such a thing, giving them a good information, showing them actual papers that talk about how dangerous it is, talking about all the people who have had major effects because of this, God forbid death, and talk about any other practice that could be considered a healthier approach to, let's say, this example talking about working out, being in eating well, exercising well, sleeping well. Good advice could only be such an important mainstay for their workout routine. And that's how I would tackle it. Taking things from a more medical and healthier point of view.
All right. So Manuel, how do you build your muscles yourself?
How do I build my muscles? Thank you. I'm going to take that as a compliment, first of all. I eat well, I sleep well. We woke up now to record at 4:30 a.m. in Lebanon. I try to exercise as much as I can, and that's it. It's a very simple, three simple step. It's a bit more complex than that, but it does make a difference.
Yeah,
it does make a difference as long as we're consistent.
Yeah, I think what we should do is to include in this podcast, and we include on the audio and the video versions, we include the videos or the audio version of these videos before each one we discuss, just for people to listen to them. And we'll see what people have, what other crazy stuff people can comment on and give us advice on for this. So one more question for you is, I think you woke up at like 3:30 or 4:30 a.m. Beirut time for this. So what What do you have today in medical schools?
I have a clinical skills rotation at the hospital with a doctor we're shadowing, a specialist in family medicine. It's a full day at the clinic with patients visiting us, doing the basic checkup, and having case studies after the patient leaves with the doctor. It's super interesting. I like it a lot. It's the first glimpse of clinical work that I observe, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to the clinical rotations later on in Metri.
Excellent, man. Excellent. And one more thing. Looks like you told me you worked for the Red Cross too.
I volunteer. Yes, I volunteer for the Lebanese Red Cross. I've been an EMT for almost 8 years now. I'm currently a mission leader and an ambulance driver, along with other credentials in the field. And yes, it's a major part of my life. And
man,
I cannot
you're a busy man, it. So you do this in addition to going to medical school.
Yes.
Good job, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was great discussing these issues with you, and hopefully we'll show people the videos and we'll discuss them. And I think the most important thing we can get out of this podcast is for people to filter out the information, as in, I think, healthcare, as in even all other information, such as political information and all other stuff. There's a lot of opinions out there. There's a lot of people who give their opinions without evidence-based, and it's always important to filter this information, make sure it's true before accepting it or sharing it. Because you see a lot of people too these days with like WhatsApp and stuff. You can send somebody a WhatsApp and suddenly it's shared like 1,000 times all over the place. And then you look at it and it's like, oh, it's not true. So I think it's really important to look at the truth of things before quickly sharing them.
Exactly. We all know about the voice notes that we get on WhatsApp, spreading rumors, spreading misinformation. I'm not just talking about medical advice, anything. Such voice notes, if we're talking about voice notes, could cause big outcry, could cause a lot of panic. Just don't be that person. Don't share such voice notes when you receive them. Don't share such pictures. Always keep an open mind about what you're reading, about what you're listening to. Check the validity of the information that you're receiving before actually sharing it, or in the case of medical advice, actually applying it.
Right, exactly. Thank you, Manuel, for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Diab. It was a pleasure.